Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, this is the Guardian Student Podcast, produced by postgraduates of international journalism at City University in London. I'm Ariana Green.
And I'm Nadine Clark.
And on this podcast, how gun culture is being tackled in London.
A record number of applications to UK universities.
Just how elitist is Cambridge.
And London gets a chance to see films that are banned in China.
There have been calls for longer prison sentences for gun crimes resulting from a recent spate of fatal shootings in South London. But some believe in prevention rather than punishment to counter gun culture. Julian Bonn has visited a youth project in North London.
It is an average weekday afternoon at the clubhouse of Dalston Youth Project in Hackney. Children aged between 8 and 14 are playing pool or ping pong or talk to one of the youth workers. The children come here as an alternative to hanging around on the streets where they would be exposed to the gangs. Many of these children have already come in contact with gangs and guns.
There's loads of gangs around here, isn't it? It's easy to get a gun there. You can get a gun by a phone call. You can get a gun by just going to someone's house. Like, loads of people have got a gun, isn't
it? Yeah, well, you see it all on the street these days. And in this estate, there's been, like, 2 shootings, a stabbing, and just loads of other stuff.
Dalston Youth Project is supported by the crime prevention charity Crime Concern. Activities for the children include games, art, and field trips. There are also regular visits from the police who talk to the children about crime. Queen Irie Rushton is a youth worker at the project. She says that it aims to deter the children from crime before a situation gets out of hand.
A lot of what's out there has made the young people very desensitized to any sort of violence, any sort of issue about carrying a violent weapon. You can't do anything apart from talk and try and gain their respect that way. We try and sort of intervene with them, talk to them and just try and bring back that awareness of cause and effect, action and reaction. If the young ones are not on the street, then they don't meet up with the ones who are already on the street and they don't get dragged into the whole street sort of life culture.
And the children at the club agree. 10-year-old Connor says that it helps them to stay off the streets.
The club take us out of it, yeah, because last week, yeah, with everyone's half term, we had a chance to go to the park and play football. We had a chance to play a pool competition and everything like that. That's why the club keeps us out of these things. If the club didn't do that for us, yeah, then we would all hang around on the streets.
The people who run projects like these argue that they have the potential to keep children away from the gangs on the streets, where they will inevitably be exposed to guns, drugs and crime. But it will be a long process.
The National Students Admission Service, UCAS, has released its latest figures on applications to UK universities. The number of students applying for courses in 2007 has gone up by more than 6%, and it expects this to be the record year for applications. The figures compiled by UCAS suggest that an extra 25,000 students have applied for university courses compared to last year's figures. For Anthony McLaren, UCAS chief executive, the trend shows that 2007 might set the record for university applications.
I think at the moment it's pointing to be a record year. Certainly at the moment it's a record year. This is the highest ever number of applications for full-time higher education we've had. It outstrips even entry in 2005, which broke the previous records. If the pattern of application continues like this for the remainder of the cycle, we will see another record-breaking year.
There has also been a 10% hike in the number of overseas students applying to UK universities. Students from the United States, Pakistan, India, and Singapore represent the highest jump in the numbers. Again, Anthony McLaren.
I think that the UK is still a very, very attractive destination for overseas students. We know that we compete extremely effectively internationally, not as well as the US, but then again the US has a vast higher education system into which to attract students. We've had to fight hard to retain our market share. But I'm encouraged by the figures this year as a sign that we're competing effectively.
UCAS expects to receive between 120 to 150,000 extra applications until the beginning of the 2007 autumn term. Last year's 3% drop in applications suggests that the introduction of top-up fees have not deterred students for very long. The National Union of Students considers the figures to be encouraging, but warns that the high costs associated with university courses still put off too many students. Wes Treating, Vice President for Education at NUS.
I think money is increasingly an issue for students, not just in terms of the fees they pay, but also just in terms of how much going to university costs now. And I think that one of the interesting things about the figures was the number of students that are now applying to traditionally vocational type courses or courses that have some sort of clear career path linked to them. And I think students are thinking about money more than ever before.
The maximum price students are willing to pay for university education varies considerably for students at London City University.
I probably go as far as maybe £3,000, maybe.
About £1,000.
I'd say, I think at the moment I'm paying 1,100, so I agree with that.
The maximum, £9,000. Yes. But I'm here on a scholarship, so I don't pay anything.
If it was free, it'd be the best.
Well, I'm an overseas student, so I pay £8,700. Yeah, I think I would pay maximum £10,000. Well, it's not a big matter for me because my parents pay.
Cambridge is among the oldest and most distinguished universities in the world. Over the next few weeks, about three-quarters of the 15,000-odd students who applied to join its class of 2010 will get rejection letters. Admission is highly competitive, but there are questions as to its fairness. Data provided by the university suggests that applicants from families in the professional managerial classes are twice as likely to gain admission as those from other classes. From dining halls in 800-year-old buildings to classes with Nobel Prize winners, Cambridge has long educated an aristocracy. But is Cambridge today sufficiently diverse?
No, really, is the answer. People say they've been to state schools. The vast majority of the people in state schools have been to very good grammar schools or very good comprehensives in middle-class areas.
Director of Admissions Jeff Parks says misperceptions about Cambridge prevent less privileged students from applying.
There's also a fear they won't fit in at Cambridge, which is kind of exacerbated by people going on about it, Cambridge being elite.
In exchange for permission to charge £3,000 per year top-up fees, the UK government is requiring Cambridge to increase its social mix. Could the university do more to bring disadvantaged students into the hallowed halls?
I think they could, but I'm not sure they really want to. I think Cambridge would be very, very successful in attracting good students, but also good students who can pay to be here.
That's Paul Townsend, who is completing a PhD in semiconductor physics at Cambridge. The university is making an effort to reach out. Its widening participation program holds events at football stadiums and state schools throughout the country. Leslie Gannon heads the program.
We have no limit on the number of bursaries that we will offer. It's a needs-based scheme, and we've said that we will provide as many bursaries as there are students who are eligible for those bursaries.
Cambridge is the richest UK university. Given that money isn't the issue, some suggest incentives should be set up to attract applicants. If students knew they could get extra admissions points because of their background, perhaps they would be more apt to try for a slot. But Richard Partington, who chairs the university's selection criteria group, says this kind of positive discrimination doesn't resonate at Cambridge.
I mean, if I were to suggest to my colleagues that we should apportion a certain number of places to people from particular backgrounds, they'd simply say that's not fair, we select on academic grounds alone.
Statistics show students from independent schools have an easier time getting in, and they tend to be from wealthier families, like this Trinity College student. Henry attended the prestigious prep school Eton.
I don't think you can place the blame at the door of the university. I think the English school system is the one to blame. As long as you allow private education, you're going to give people an unfair head start. And the government won't touch that because they're scared of offending the kind of aspirational middle classes.
Tradition makes Cambridge stand out. But some are calling for traditional recruiting and admissions patterns to get a rewrite.
A film festival to promote Chinese culture has opened in London. It's been organized by the Chinese Cultural Center and will continue until the end of the month. Some of the films on show have been banned in mainland China. Our reporter, Tian Yu, has been along to find out more.
During this festival, some exhibitions are to be held in London, and audiences also can get access to some brilliant Chinese films, which have never been allowed to be shown in China. The chief organizer Susie Wong says, even facing pressures from Chinese embassy, she would continue to introduce good Chinese films into Britain.
Some of the films are not allowed to show in China because different reasons, maybe
the story is not as good because they have some contain some too sexy or too much sex in there, or some of them is political, and some of them is they have exposed some of the bad things about China. Although the Chinese embassy here some sort of hinted to me that maybe you should not show the film in my festival, but I rejected their request not to do it, you see.
Happy Together is a Chinese film directed by a Hong Kong director at the opening of this year's festival. The story is about love between two Chinese gays, which is a definitely sensitive topic in China. Most of the audiences say that they have never watched such sort of adventurous Chinese films before.
It's sort of an unusual subject, which I've never really seen anything about before. I mean, gay Chinese men. And it was a bit of a shock, because within 2 minutes of the film starting, they were making love. And there was a lot of sex in the film, which I was really surprised about. I didn't really expect that.
It was so with it. You know, with China, you always think of China looking on homosexuality as though it's a bad thing. But at least I was very involved.
I felt it was very atmospheric. I thought it was very... it told a fantastic human story. So I like those movies, but I haven't seen any other Chinese movies.
I wouldn't think it can be that objective, because with such a government, like that, I suppose you can't really express all feelings. But I'm sure it's going to grow. I mean, because as China is opening up more to the West, I think the industry will grow as well.
Most of viewers seldom watch Chinese films before, but they're quite interested. Ms. Wang says she hopes the Chinese government would relax their policies on censorship, helping them to promote Chinese films in Britain as well as other forms of Chinese culture.
That's it for this podcast. You can log on to educationguardian.co.uk for the latest news about students and universities, and have your say on our Motorboard blog.
Guardian Unlimited.